This is a HeadGum Podcast.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by the Fine Dining Podcast. Caroline, do you like to dine finely?
I do, because it rhymes with my name.
Caroline, dine fine, drinking water, drinking wine.
With Diane Feinstein.
With Diane Feinstein. RIP. Fine Dining, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America, is a podcast where comedian Michael Ornelas is traveling the country, eating at all the chain restaurants in search of the perfectly average 5 out of 10 dining experience. The objective middle threshold of where bad becomes good, which, if you listen to this podcast, you're very familiar with the concept.
With a 5 out of 10 experience.
And bad maybe becoming good, as God saves us. Recently, featured guests include Marissa Pinson and John Glover as they review Costco's Food Court. It's a two-part episode that covers everything from discontinued menu items to how many hot dogs could fit in their mouths. And today, his IHOP episode dropped. So right now, head over to linktree.com/finedining podcast and click Bee's Giveaway to enter for an all-expenses-paid trip to your local Applebee's, the current frontrunner for the most mediocre restaurant in America at a 5.02 out of 10 for you and three of your friends. And you can watch or listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Caroline, who would you take?
Oh my gosh.
Applebee's?
If I got a table for four at Applebee's.
Yeah.
Obviously, love of my life, Nathan, gonna be there.
My fingers are crossing.
Who likes chain restaurants?
I'm getting a nosebleed.
Probably my friend Jeremy. Okay.
I know him.
That leaves one more. Let me ask you a question,
yeah,
Kevin.
Yeah.
If you were gonna order an Applebee's right now, what would you get?
I'd get a fried onion if they had it.
All right, you're in.
Okay.
As long as we can share.
Hell yeah. Listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Enter by May 1st, and the winner will be announced on the May 8th Chipotle episode. That's linktree.com/finedining podcast. We're listening to Create in Me a Clean Heart by Keith Green today on Good Christian Fun. Oops. I had the wrong one. No, I had the wrong theme song locked and loaded. I'll cut all this out.
Oh, okay, yeah. So the next one won't have that, right?
Yeah, the next one won't have that. We're listening to Create a Clean Heart in Me by Keith Green today on Good Christian Fun.
My butthole's tickling all the time.
Do you think you can make God laugh?
No, bitch.
You're a clown if you say fuck. I'm a Christian wife.
Sicario.
I'm a Christian wife.
White women are notoriously shifty.
I'm a Christian wife.
You should be upset that I had a laugh with her.
Clean up on aisle butt.
Is Mambo number 5, ska?
A little bit of Mindy in my life. A little bit of Mickey by her side. A little bit of Donald's all I need. A little bit of Daisy's what I see. A little bit of Pluto in the sun. Dewey, 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 can't go wrong. A little bit of Goofy, everyone. A little bit of him makes life so fun.
Welcome to Good Christian Fun. I'm Kevin.
Woo. Let's yuck and skank.
I'm Scott, fan number one, Goofy, and we're here to have some good Christian fun.
That's right. We need to do maybe a radio edit version for that song.
What would the radio edit be?
Just, you know, nothing that is embarrassingly graphic coming out of my mouth.
I could do a radio edit for the next one. Do you want me to
do the Kidz Bop version of the very same lyrics?
You're a clown if you say freak, like things like that.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Caroline, it's been a little bit since we've seen each other.
Yeah.
It's been nay over
a
week.
Do I seem different? Mm-hmm. Do I seem chill as hell?
Not at all. Do I?
That's true. No.
Yeah, see?
Not once.
I think the message we want to impart on this podcast is people never change and don't hope for progress
in
your life.
Don't take time for yourself.
No.
Don't relax. No, I went on vacation. I went to the ocean. I went to the sea.
Mm-hmm. From the titular Hillsong song, Oceans. You were like, okay, I've heard about it. Now I got to see it.
I'm gonna make these oceans fall. And I saw whales. I saw otters close by. It was very nice.
Yeah, very lovely. Good.
Yeah.
Are you going to keep in touch with them?
The otters?
Yeah.
No, they're dicks.
Oh, that sucks. You think you make a connection, it turns out it's like a one-way street. Ugh.
Yeah.
Lonely feeling.
Like, yeah. It's like the stuff they didn't say, you can kind of feel it out.
Yeah, oh, totally. There's that. All communication is nonverbal. That's what they say. All communication is nonverbal.
All communication.
Good Christian Fun is the podcast where we talk about Christian pop culture, the movies, the music, and the entertainment made for and made by, sometimes, Christians. But we're not here to make fun of you or your beliefs. We're not here to make you go to church either. We don't want anyone to go to church right now. We want you to stay at home. Have a home church. Have a home church with you, yourself, and you. Those are the three congregants. Light some candles and pray to whatever you want to pray to. Pray to your golden gods of Netflix and Hulu and HBO Max.
Yeah. Nothing to add.
Okay, great. Cool.
I agree.
Caroline concurs. Zoom church. TV church.
TV church?
It's all happening in 2020, but we're here today to talk about a single song that maybe some of you have sang in church before in another lifetime. I haven't sang this particular song in church in quite a bit. I wasn't singing it before current circumstances either, but it's a song called Creating Me a Clean Heart by Keith Green.
Keith Green, which we covered before.
Yeah.
And we're coming back to the greener pastures.
Did you remember him at all?
Yes, but I did look up his Wikipedia again today because I was like, something bad happened to him, and then I remembered.
He buddy-hollied out, unfortunately. Sad.
Oh.
Yeah, wait, should I not use that as a verb? Is that flipping?
Yeah, say Kennedy'd.
Should I say he did a reverse Sully?
Oh my God.
Say Kennedy'd. Oh gosh.
Boy.
Well, we need to be saved, so let's introduce a guest to save us from ourselves.
Please.
Friends and folks, he is a podcast extraordinaire. You may know him from his podcast, The Black Tapes or The Big Loop. Everybody, give it the hell up for Paul Bay! Woo! Paul is Bay, and he's on our podcast today. Finally.
Hello, praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord, buddy.
Paul, you are cleared for a safe landing.
I have landed. In between the lines, waving me in. I've made the turn. Everyone unbuckle and turn on your cell phones, please.
Oh, there's a man who's landed a pod plane before. And
welcome,
he is cleared for approach. Thanks for coming on the show, friend.
Well, thanks for having me, especially during this time right now. I think people need to hear a joyful podcast during these days.
I
think that'd be good.
I certainly hope so. We hope to multiply your joy until we are unbelievably bummed out in about 40 days and can't do a good show anymore.
I'm looking forward to this year's Christmas special from you too, where it gets progressively depressed as we near the Jesus' birthday.
I guess we'll talk about the fourth Amy Grant Christmas. I can't do this. I can't do this, Caroline. Caroline's marriage starts to crumble.
Like, what is the meaning of Christmas, let alone anything right now? You know, like, what is that?
Now, the thing that keeps me going is memories of 2016 podcasting and memories I have of my hubris and pride during those.
The optimism. The excitement.
I will not make an optimistic mistake ever again. I promise you that.
If you never make a guess, you're never wrong.
And that's gambling. Paul, thank you so much for joining us on the show, buddy.
Thanks for having me. It's been a while.
It's been a long time. We haven't seen each other for a few years, but one of the things I remember so much of the first time we met is a part of your backstory, which is not just anyone's sort of casual brush with religion, but the fact that you were for a time yourself a youth pastor.
Yes. In 1990, I think 92, 93, 94, I went to Regent College. Those were great years. Early 90s.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was totally into it.
First term Clinton era of youth pastor. I mean, what could go wrong? Well, before we get to that, how'd you grow up with religion when you were a kid? What was your background?
Like 85% of Korean Americans, even though I'm in Canada, it's the same demographic, same stats. Oh, I grew up in the Protestant church, a Korean Protestant church, which means our parents would take us to church and there'd always be two buildings. There'd be the one for adults because it's all in Korean. And then the rest of us, even if you were like over 20, but you didn't speak Korean, you were sent to the kids' church. So there was a demarcation. It was always really funny watching when I was in elementary school, seeing these like 21-year-olds that didn't speak Korean in our kids' church.
That is very funny.
And they'd have to do the same games and all this kind of stuff. That none of them turned out well. But I see them on the street once in a while. I give them money.
Humbling.
But, you know, it's all of us together in that weird... It was such a weird... When I found out my white friends went to church and they all went to the same sanctuary and sang the same songs, my mind was blown. It was crazy.
And that's privilege.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah, that's at work. That's so funny imagining like an adult child like crushing the Bible quizes.
Father
in front of, like,
Abraham. Many sons.
Many sons.
Please don't get competitive.
That's great.
Okay, so it was a part of your family's culture and your lifeblood from the start. And then what led you into vocational ministry from there? What was like high school and college like?
It was like after my first year of university, I guess I went through a bad breakup. So that's always the first thing that makes you question yourself. Like you're happy until that first breakup. And so I was 18. And I remember, do you guys remember an evangelist named Tony Campolo?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tony and
so
Bart.
He spoke at Urbana 88. And my pastor in Vancouver found the tape because he went, bought it, brought it over. And I found myself breaking down during his big talk about you can't be separated from the love of Christ. And I remember being at that camp and I'm looking around, I'm like, this is not hitting any of you guys? And I just started breaking down. Yes. And I couldn't figure out why. And all my friends like, what the hell's up with Paul? And so it's like, that's the day, even though I grew up in the church, you probably hear this a lot, I suddenly understood what it meant.
Yeah.
And that was when that's when I had to have the hard talk with my parents. I'm like, you know, I'm going back to McGill to study, but I'm not going to law school anymore. I'm going to try to find God. And they just flipped out. They're like, nah, you'll outgrow this, whatever. And after my undergrad, I went to Regent College to study theology.
That's so funny, the thing about parents who have hesitance of vocational ministry. Like, that also raised you religious, where they're like, well, we didn't mean that much. Like, yeah. Man.
It's like, what do you think is going to happen? You keep sending me these youth conferences.
Yeah, they take me to church all my life. I'm like, Mom, Dad, you're right. I'm going to follow Jesus. Like, oh, no, don't take it that seriously. This is just a hobby.
Oh, we're not dedicated, you know? Yeah. Like, we're just, like, here.
So studying theology at university, what do you feel like? Like, I'm interested even in what feels relevant or salient about the way it shaped how you think even now, if that affects your day-to-day life now.
It doesn't really.
All the right, only that's thing- an answer.
Thanks for having me on your podcast. That was great.
Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah, appreciate it.
The thing it did instill, like I went through, after I left, so I was a youth pastor. I got married to my college sweetheart. She took a hard right into evangelism, we're speaking in tongues. She was part of the whole Airport Vineyard ministry in Toronto. I don't know if you ever heard of that.
Yeah, explain that to us.
You should probably Google it. It was a global phenomenon in like 1990, I want to say, or around that era. And it was like this huge airport hangar at the Pearson International Airport in Toronto, converted into an evangelical center. And they would have daily worship, and people would fly in around the world to learn how to laugh in the spirit.
Ooh.
And I think you still find it on YouTube where people laugh like seals, like they're just overcome with joy.
Yeah. This is also known as Catch the Fire World.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, or maybe they rebranded from
Catch the Fire World. Speak in tongues.
Oh, this was speaking in tongues. This was everything. My wife dragged me. My fiance at the time dragged me there because I was having back problems, and she wanted them to pray over me. And so I went there and let all these laughing strangers put their hands on my back, and it was really freaky. And
so
then,
intense.
Yeah, so I should have probably not married her at that point, but we kept it going because I thought I made a promise to God. Who am I to judge? We got married. I became an atheist right after the wedding, right after,
because
my faith was really teetering.
Like the night of the honeymoon, you became.
Yeah. right after, boom.
Which was her like extra dedication, like an influence on you losing your faith or like causing disillusionment, or was it separate from her?
A little bit. I think it became to a point where it was like I couldn't enjoy the things, like, you know, even when I was a Christian, I still enjoyed drinking beer. I listened to my music. I loved Soundgarden. Mm-hmm. I loved all that stuff. And so once we got married, it became a thing of like, well, you really shouldn't drink beer anymore. Not even one. You probably shouldn't listen to what she called devil music. She called Soundgarden devil music, and would turn it off whenever I turned it on when I thought I was home alone. So those little things will stack up, and I was like, you probably married the wrong person, or I probably married the wrong. Well, we both came to this realization: this is probably not going to work out unless I get my faith back. So she politely asked me to leave the house. And then, you know, find my
She
faith.
Was polite. That's fine. Yeah.
You might want to leave. I can't be yoked with you. Yoked.
If you don't
remember
mind,
that word?
Please pack your fucking bags.
Yeah. Maybe it was more like
she
that.
She wouldn't say that.
No. No, and I left, and then I the faith didn't come back. It just left. And so I went through a long period where I was very angry towards Christians, which made it very hard on my Christian friends to hang out with me. And then after I came out of that dark period and I became more of a atheist slash agnostic, like I don't really like thinking about that stuff anymore. I'm just very happy with where I am. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to answer these questions and I'll never figure it out. So I might as well just experience joy. It's the community part of church that hit me again. And what I'm finding out, the older I get every year, I'm finding out the Sermon on the Mount is something I still follow. Like, I'm still very passionate about taking care of my neighbors, making sure there's no one in my community who's in want or need, like that stuff. And I'm finding, well, I'm pretty sure I'm getting that from my church days. Like, it's not coming from me. Like, it's something that's stuck in me. And so that's the part. In answer to your question, Kevin, if I kept anything from those theology days, that's the thing that's still in me. And I'm finding I like to go to that well quite a lot because it brings me a lot of joy.
The well of particularly of that Sermon on the Mount stuff, or just kind of what that represents?
What's that represents? But I do imagine, like, I find myself going, what would Jesus do? And I used to hate those bracelets in the 90s when people used to wear them. And I find myself, whenever I encounter situations, sometimes I go, what would Jesus do at this situation? Because it's always something that I find, I guess it might be out of habit from doing it for so long, but I'm finding it always brings joy whenever I do that. And I'm hoping I won't have to think like that anymore. It'll just be, what would I do? But I don't think I'm good enough to ever get to that point. So I need that model to sort of follow, if that makes any sense at all from
that
an atheist.
That fully makes sense, yes. And of course you would appeal to something outside of yourself, even if it's just an exercise of humility and not thinking, well, basically I clearly know exactly what to do in whatever the situation calls for. So I think that totally makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like a little shorthand mantra maybe too, or a belief, but just the reminder to like step outside your comfort and your own like needs or whatever for the moment. And because I imagine it's rarely like, what would Jesus do? Continue doing exactly what I'm doing, you know, like for you, it's probably just like your mental trick also to like remind yourself to, yeah, like practice your values, even when it's like a little harder.
It's like, and it's usually for the harder situations. Like, you know, like my wife and I were driving when the quarantine started. We're talking about, I'm like, man, I feel really bad for these guys at the street corners. Like, how are they? I bet you they're getting no money at all. And just as I said that, we turned a corner and we saw a guy on the street with a dog. And I'm like, and my wife's looking at me like, we probably should have stopped. Like, I bet he's getting nobody because of the threat of the virus going around. I'm like, you know, Neil, he'll figure it out. And then I got a little farther. I went one light and I thought, what would Jesus do thing came up? And I look at my wife in combination with that. I'm like, ah, fuck. And I just turned on a U-turn, went back. I had to go out, wave him down. I'm like, stop, stay there. I'm putting this in a bag on a rock. I'm going to walk. This is at the beginning, like at March. You remember end of February, beginning of March, like when it all started, we didn't know what it was. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to walk away, but you make sure you get this bag. Don't make sure no one else grabs this bag. Yeah. And then
he's
I ran
like,
away.
It's fine. Like, chill. You know, like it's clearly you need this maybe more than I. So we
yeah. And I'm like, I'm sure Jesus would do that as I drove away. I'm like, I'm pretty sure he'd be driving this car too.
Yeah. And you know what? Actually, Jesus would go probably like 5 miles above the speed limit right now. Not 10, but 5's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Or kilometers.
In the Good News version of the Bible, he can't drive 55.
I very much relate to that too. I feel like when I was younger too, and think a lot of those, usually it was like, me thinking that I needed to go witness to someone, like, in an uncomfortable, like, not the right time to do it at a Home Depot, like, with my dad, you know?
Yeah, that's when
I was like, Jesus is calling me now, you know? Like, this is the time.
Although so good fruit can happen there at Home Depot, trust me.
Oh, I mean, what's their mantra? Their phrase is like, where homes are built or something?
No, their phrase, their tagline is, when you're home, you're depot.
Almost got a Coke Zero spit take on
I
that
know,
one.
I was trying to time it that way.
Close.
I also like the idea that you mentioned, Paul, of WWJD as sort of a gateway into You're creating your own virtue and character internally. For some reason, it triggered in me this memory of looking at a friend of mine reposted a link to this book that is literally called You're Not Enough, Escaping the Toxic Culture of Self-Love. And it's like a Christian Catholic self-help book. It's by Ali Beth Stuckey. And it is probably what you think it is as far as that stuff goes. And I think WWJD in the past and how we all probably like associate with it and grew up with it is like, think about what Jesus would do, but keep thinking about it because you're never going to know. Like, it's never going to become internalized in any meaningful way.
Well, because you're selfish, like, to your core forever, and you don't make good decisions. Like, I feel like that was the implied reason there.
Yeah. I never make good decisions. I rarely make these good. Like, I always have to remind, like, I need to call upon something else. Like, what would my wife do? I do that a lot. Like, what would she do in this situation? Or what would I used to have this friend, well, I still do, my buddy Jason. He's the most patient man I know. And whenever I'm feeling aggression towards strangers when they're in my face or something, or, you know, someone's really rude to me, I'm like, what would he do right now? Right, which would usually
Paul,
be walk away.
Who thought that thought?
Jesus.
You did.
I thought that thought. Sorry.
Wrong.
See, like, even when you said that, I thought, how would Jesus answer?
I guess I'm trying to find a root of encouragement for this in you, for you too. Of like, you know, these things you're attributing to everybody else's character, but it's your character that is prompting yourself to like be better, and that's, you know, that's good. That's still coming from you.
Yeah, I'm like Mjolnir, like Thor's hammer, summoning these more powerful things into my... Wait, I'm the one... I can't carry myself.
No, this metaphor is perfect. Caroline, help him out as a Marvel
You're
fan.
You're Thor. The hammer is your friend's best characteristics.
And yes. I'm Wanda.
And I am not freaking Wanda.
Waving on the corner saying like, good job.
Nice save for me. Thank you.
You're welcome. Anytime.
I want to boomerang back to your time as a youth pastor and talk about that a little. A Clinton-era youth pastor. I'm obsessed with that being the time marker for some reason.
With the Clintons.
But what led to that? What were some of the challenges, the experiences, the memories of youth pastoring?
I think I was always, the church just asked me, they found out I was going to go to Regent to study, and I told them about my conversion, and they were totally shocked and they were delighted. And then they had a meeting, and then they called me while I was at Montreal and said, you know, right after graduation, come here. We'll pay for your schooling and we'll give you a monthly stipend. We'll pay you to be a youth pastor. And then we'll give sermons every Sunday to the high school college group, make up a curriculum for them, lead the Bible study leaders and telling them what the curriculum is. So it makes sense that I would later on become a high school teacher because when I was, you know, 21, I'm learning how to do this stuff. So I came back, I did it. And it was fun. It was like I tried to give the sermons that I wanted to hear, that I thought I wanted. Like, you know, never over 20 minutes. Kids can't pay attention over 20 minutes. Keep it short.
Caroline can't pay attention over 20 minutes.
15, 10.
Yeah, I kept them really short. We didn't have a praise group. And I remember hearing from other friends, like, you know, the praise was the big thing now in the early 90s. Like, everyone had drums and guitars, and these churches were doing these types of things. So I would visit some, and no one knew how to play an instrument in our church, which is weird, a church full of Koreans, and no one played a piano. And I'm like, this is fucked up. What kind of Koreans are we? So I learned how to play guitar.
My goodness.
So, like, over Christmas break. And I thought, I just need four chords. If I learn the four chords, I could just play really loud. And then there's our praise thing. And it worked. It seemed to work out. So I was praise leading. I was giving sermons. I felt
this
like
is so much work while you were in college as a 20-year-old.
Yeah, it was like
17 new skills to learn, like, in a second.
It was fun, though, because, you know, the college group, a lot of them were, like, my friends. So it was weird, like, you know, we used to party together and that kind of stuff. Then all of a sudden, I'm the guy giving the sermons to my friends, my former roommates.
Oh, I didn't realize. I thought you were teaching high school. You were also doing your college age.
Like, I was doing the college age group, too, yeah. Oh, my goodness. My peers. And it was really weird. But they'd all been with me and been through my journey with me, so they were really into it, seeing this change in me. It was one of those things where, like, well, if Paul can do this, it's like he took the, if I can make it, all of you, it was obvious everyone else can be a Christian.
Yeah,
it was one
like of those things, right? Influencer in that circle, I bet.
Yeah, and not just that, just the, if this high school party guy can become this, you know, all of us can, right? Like, if Paul could suddenly turn this around. not that it was easy, but it's, the hardest part was when we had to do outreach and to do things like, you know, we had a homeless outreach with a smaller group. And I'm like, oh, that's when it really hit. I'm like, who the hell am I? I feel so unequipped. And there was no one else to show me how to do it. Mm-hmm. So that was probably the toughest thing of the whole experience.
Yeah. Do you look back at all at the church leadership and are like, what were y'all doing there? This kid, like, I just had this big conversion. Like, you're so fresh to it, you know, and like excited. Yeah. And you probably feel like called by God into this role. And just like no background check, you know, like no help, proof of like your ability to do this like kind of important job, you know?
Yeah, I sometimes think back and think that was sort of irresponsible of them to put so much power in my hands.
Not that you weren't good. I'm sure you were great, but it's just like that'd be too much for like a 40-year-old, you know? Like,
yeah, no, I wasn't that great. I was entertaining. I don't know how effective I was, but I entertained the kids. I would have like a, once a month I'd have something like the Christian version of an SNL. Like, yeah, I'd invite other churches to come over and we'd do sketches.
Paul.
We did musical productions. That's when I learned how to write music. And I'm like, okay, we packed these churches because it became super popular. I'd get all the high school kids like, invite a friend. Everyone has to bring a friend. Trust me, I won't embarrass you. I'm not your uncle. I won't do that. They're going to think it's cool. And it worked. It was cool for a while.
Musical guest, King David.
I remember we did a thing on like a satire, a parody of Cinderella, but it was Sumerella, and all these sumo actors, like my friends, they would walk around and you know. Anyways, it was funny.
But
at the time.
The sumo wrestlers come to Christ at the end of that sketch?
They did. They did. There was a skinny sumo that they were never invited to the competition, and you'd always have to wipe the other sumo's butts. Like, it was one of those things.
Oh,
and, you know, these high school kids were like, "Oh, wiping butts. That's funny, dude." Like, they love that shit.
Not wrong.
But then they were thinking about that later, you know?
Yeah,
like,
I think
wow,
so,
that
yeah.
was real wrong about all the butt
what
stuff
is
that
the
had to
butt
do.
I need to wipe in my life?
Did I give
That's
you the script,
so
Kevin?
Crazy.
Yeah, no. I'm looking at it right now. Oh, gracious. Okay, but the thing is with youth pastor stuff, half of it is entertainment. You are a cruise ship director in a sense.
yeah.
It's like pick the charismatic, like younger guy, and it'll probably like be pretty good. You'll get pretty good attendance, you know, like the kids want to be your friend and stuff like that. And you know, if you're comfortable at a mic, like it's gonna be, you got the job.
Yeah, it ended on a bad note because what ended up happening, like a lot of Korean churches at the time, there's political strife among the adult congregation. It's funny, I call it the adult, even though I was an adult. The older Korean-speaking congregation that brought in the money. I didn't know there was a separate faction that was almost cultish that was going on. So the education leader, she sent me to California to learn this leadership program or something. And I went down and it was a cult. And I had to escape quite dramatically on day three or four of it. It was in L.A.
What happened?
It was just outside L.A. They sent me down. I didn't know anyone was going. I met these other Canadians in the van on the way down. They made us switch vans three times from LAX to wherever we were going. It was really shady. We came out. They sang the song called De Coloris, and they're all saying, "We love you, we love you." They put lays over our head. It was really weird. This extra outpouring of love, and you know, I was like what, 21, 22 at the time, and I was very. I just came from a fraternity where we did that kind of stuff to screw with people's heads. Mm-hmm. And to see Christians doing it, covering the windows, taking our watches, I'm like, this is really shady.
What?
Yeah, and there were hundreds of Korean undergrads there And people like me, like just graduated, going to Bible college, youth leaders at their respective churches. And they're all these guys were like smart, charismatic. And then they had, it was really weird. It was very culty. I'd get back. I remember the first day we went back to our dorms, which was locked. So we'd have to wait for them to unlock it. We'd go in. Someone had unpacked all my bags, folded my underwear, left notes for me all over my room. Like, we love you, Paul. Gave me a Galatians verse. I don't remember which one it was. They'd put my toothbrush in the holder. Like, they went through all my stuff, folded it, put it in the drawers so that they said so that I wouldn't have to waste time on it. And they want to show that they were serving me. But I was like, this is really scary.
Probably looking for like stuff too. Like if anybody brought something like, you know, quote unquote wrong. But also like that the multiple boundaries crossed like in your first hour there is so crazy.
Oh my God.
Yeah. On the second day, I remember at breakfast, they said, we're going to go to a Bible study. So I remember taking my Bible because they said something in the pastor said something the first day that I'm like, wait, I swear to God, he misquoted that. So I grab my Bible and they go, oh, you don't have to bring your Bible. We told you that. I'm like, yeah, I want to bring it anyways. They go, no, you don't have to bring it. I'm like, well, I insist. They go, well, we'd rather you didn't. And it became one of those really weird things. And they had to take me to a side office and talk to me like, listen, you're Canadian. In America, you probably don't know. We just sort of go with the flow. And I remember being very offended by that because I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's not true. These guys are really, that's just I'm just being careful. You guys, I'm like, I don't, what the hell's going on here? Anyways, even when I want to go to the bathroom, they had to send these muscular Korean dudes with me and they'd stand behind me while I'm at the urinal. I don't know what they were thinking I was going to do. I think I was on the radar already as the troublemaking Canadian. They started talking about literal demons attacking us, and they anointed some prayer warriors. So at night,
just smart, honestly.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, right?
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I'm no prayer warrior, right? I'm still a squire. I'm there. We're listening to the sermons. We have to go to the this planetarium type of gathering. It was at night, and they said the demons are going to be attacking us because God, Satan knows what's happening here. We're a force to be reckoned with. Mm-hmm. So they go, stay within the prayer warrior bounds. And I had no clue what that was. We get outside and there's like a human corridor with their flashlights over us very dramatically.
Cool.
Praying literally to keep the, I guess, demons out from the causeway.
They're scared
walking.
Of lights.
Exactly, yeah.
I've seen Lovecraft Country. This is the same process.
It's the same premise, right? Duracell's Energizer, doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Right? It's a light from a flashlight. Ephesians 2:4, right?
Okay, I bet visually, A's. Though, that was really cool, and I wish I had done that at my wedding.
What, scared like demons off with flashlights?
Yeah, but then also like the entrance into the reception.
It was pretty cool looking. It was pretty like with the beams and everything. I don't know what those flashlights were, but it was really cool. Anyway,
so crazy. Did you get
crazy.
To talk to any of the other attendees and be like, this is weird?
They were you know, they were normal people, and I'm like, no, this is not weird. I'm like, you guys don't find it weird that he misquoted that thing? So he misquoted something. Do you know the whole Bible? I'm like, no, I guess not. And then it was actually at one thing where they're speaking in tongues, and it got really weird. I remember looking up when I was supposed to be praying, like, is anyone else find it's weird? And it was the other Canadians. And so I sort of said, I sort of made a head motion, and we sort of like inched towards each other. I'm like, this is really weird, right? They're like, yeah, this is freaking me out. And we started sharing. I go, let's meet at the cafeteria later on. We got caught. We're trying to compare notes, and they didn't want us doing that. Then over the next 2 days, we compared notes, and we figured out, okay, we probably need to leave, right? This is amping up really quick. It probably may not be dangerous, but it's just very uncomfortable. So we snuck back to the thing. Three guys, one girl. We weren't friends, but we would know each other enough that we weren't sucked into that. We couldn't get back in because they changed a combo twice a day. And the young woman we were with, she just goes to the front and she, like, this quiet Korean girl who didn't
just
contribute anything up to this time. She watches everything, like really smart, like a spy.
Amazing.
And she goes, we're in. So we go in, we grab our stuff. We're like, hurry up, meet back here in like 3 minutes. We just ran, grabbed our stuff. We ran towards, I remember, the edge of campus. There was a wall. We helped her up. We all jump over it. Now
jumped
there's a
wall?
We jumped a wall. Well, it's just a campus wall. And it wasn't like super tall, maybe 6 feet. We go over. Remember, it's like nighttime. We don't have flashlights. We ran through a field. And I don't know how long we ran for, but there were lights in the distance. We could tell it was a highway gas station. And we get there. And it's one of those things where a huge gas station, but the gas station part is small with three pumps. And on the far end of the empty parking lot is the phone booth. So it's one of those things, right? With a light underneath. And I still remember what it looked like. We get to the phone booth. I call my one cousin in LA and in Orange County. And I go, hey, it's Paul. I go, I'm in LA. She goes, oh my God, what are you doing here? I'm like, I escaped a cult. Can you come get me? And she's like, where are you? I'm like, oh, hold on one second. Because I met, so I had to run all the way back to the gas station, ask the guy, where are we? And he goes, you're da da da. And I went back to the thing, I'm here. She goes, oh my God, you're 2 hours away from Orange County. So I guess I was.
Where had they taken you?
What is it? Northwest, no, sorry, northeast of Hollywood. Like, so I guess like 2 hours northeast of Hollywood. I have no, there's a college there.
Probably in like Pomona area or something like that?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
North of Hollywood is not Pomona.
No, it's he's saying northeast and like
more east.
Hours away.
Oh, yeah.
That is great. That's so cinematic.
Yeah, it was crazy. And then she came and got us, and we had to explain. Go, hi, this is Dennis. This is John. This is Gian. We escaped from a cult. We had to tell her the whole story.
And Operation Maple Leaf was a success.
Oh my gosh, they totally took something out of your suitcase and like have kept it for DNA.
Oh yeah. And it was so awkward when I came back to Canada to church because the woman who sent me, I was so upset. I'm like,
yeah.
And that's when I found out there was huge, like the church split up right after that. When they found out what happened to me, because they told her, don't bring that into our church. And then a small little breakaway group led by her did that. So
they objected. They're like, no, wow. We should bring this. Yeah.
It was great. But it's a great story. I remember thinking at the time, this is going to be so much fun to tell my buddies.
Amazing story. Like, I want to watch that as a show. Like, I want to see that happen. It's just so wild. Every element of that, like the changing of the vans, even at the beginning.
Yeah.
And, like, the creeping, weird stuff, you know? Like, yeah. It's slightly worse.
You know what's funny? Because I remember on day two or three, they sent in what we call the psychologist, this Korean guy who had a psych major in undergrad. They sent him in to talk to us. And I remember he had the early Elon Musk hair before the plugs, you know, like the baby elephant hair up top. I remember him because he's 21 and he looked really odd to me at the time because I'm like, you look 50, dude. And so he's coming up and he goes, I'm a psychology major. They sent me here. What's the problem? I'm like, it's just, I don't know. It's just, and he goes, he kept saying, I'm a psychology major. This is normal. I'm like, and so it became a back and forth. Years later, I ran into him in Vancouver. Like I guess he got hired to lead a church. And I remember visiting a friend there, and I'm like, hey. So I remember going up to him, like, do you remember me? And he goes,
oh,
and his eyes just went down. He goes, yes. I go, yeah, that was some weird times, eh? And he's like, and I sort of wanted him to say sorry or something like that, because apparently he doesn't even do that stuff anymore. Like, he's just a mainstream. No, apparently he's a mainstream evangelical.
He quit the psychology.
Yeah.
Cop force that he was a part of to go.
You know what the crazy part was? His hair was exactly the same. Like, he didn't lose any more hair. Like, it stayed in that phase.
He's a survivor.
That's right. He's committed to the look, and it worked.
Wow.
Yeah. And so he looks weirdly ageless now.
Yeah.
That's gracious. So crazy.
Yeah, cult stuff is always so the beliefs that are strong enough to motivate this much nonsensical behavior are so fascinating to me, to justify van exchanges and going through other people's shit and therapist cops. It's incredible.
I must have a, my wife says I must have a face that cult people like, because I also got tried, my friends tried to, you know, I'm in Vancouver, a lot of actors. I'm not gonna, I'm without trying to say who it was, a bunch of people tried to recruit me into NXIVM, that sex cult. That's
by
Keith Raniere. That's The Vow. It's the HBO thing,
yes,
right?
Get your volleyball shorts on. You're going to NXIVM.
I'm going to NXIVM.
I'm like,
I'm flattered.
Doctrine.
I'm flattered. Thank you so much.
Incredible. Yeah, I was literally about to make a NXIVM joke, and you were legitimately tried to.
Legitimately,
I mean, Canada was a big source
for
that particular organization.
Idea.
Oh, I'm not going to say who, but in that documentary, I know so many of those people, because the acting community is quite small here in Vancouver, Hollywood North. So it's weird watching, because all my friends are like, dude, you got to watch this. So-and-so's in. I'm like, what? And so I'm watching this thing. I'm like, what the hell? I'm like, those are the guys that tried
to
recruit.
You met those people. Oh, my God.
Oh, I know them. They tried to recruit me. And then I remember at the time when they told me about it, and they called it Executive Success Program. I'm like, this sounds cultish. And they go, you think everything's a cult ever since your little weird little California experience. I'm like, no, this sounds like a real cult. And I remember the arguments we had and like whatever. But
they heard about your skills in SNL production and they thought that would be an important element to bring into the cult.
I want to be a featured player at church at South Korean SNL church.
I must have that face. I bet you this guy would love our cult.
I don't think it's the face. I think it probably is like the charisma. They're like, yeah, if this guy was a part of this group, like he would be such a powerful like draw for people, you know, that like
get this guy with us.
Part of it.
Yeah.
You could weaponize this.
Unfortunately, you're too smart.
Yes, you could weaponize for evil if you wanted to, but thankfully you don't.
Yeah.
Or allow myself to be recruited and deprogram everybody while in there.
Yeah. Because
I have a strong anti-cult resistance, right? My eyes don't glaze over. Like I can stay strong while in there.
Yeah.
I feel like the thing that maybe helped you, like, if you'd maybe been a little bit lonelier, you know, or a little bit less connected to your family or your like friends or something like that.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing with cults or with anything like that. Like we all think it's just a matter of being smart or not, but it's really just like, it's just finding a family connectedness sort of thing, you know?
It's such a mixture of fact. It is nothing to do with who's smart or not.
It's even multi-level marketing and all that stuff.
I'm a dummy, like, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a mixture of like
stupid
vulnerability, the place you are in your life, and having a super low IQ.
Kevin.
Almost.
He's close.
to wrap up this particular section, Paul, do you identify as an atheist now? How would you describe your belief system?
I do. If when I do have to define myself, I say atheist because it's just I don't believe in anything until it's presented to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope for more. I hope I'm wrong is what I'm saying.
A hopeful atheist. I like that perspective.
Yeah.
See, a latitude for optimism, which is something. What did I say before we started recording, Caroline?
I think that was it. A latitude for surprise.
A latitude for surprise.
Kevin's 2020 call to action.
Yeah, where it's like, I think it's going to be this, but I'm going to leave a little bit of wiggle room to see if I'm wrong. Well, Paul, thanks for sharing your story, man. It was really great to hear and the unexpected adventure that it became, too.
For real. Yeah.
Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back with more good Christian fun. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, Caroline, I got a question for you.
Yes.
How is your social battery right now? Are you feeling drained? Do you got a lot of energy right now? Where are you at with things as we speak today?
Well, you know, when you're pregnant, famously, your social battery is endless, actually, because you're powered by a baby battery.
It's like someone slaps a mag charger onto your phone.
Exactly.
And you can go for like 24 hours more.
I am the U.S. Marines of taking down social situations. I feel incredible all the time. So yeah, that's where I'm at. What about you?
Wow. Well, I'm feeling a little drained. And sometimes it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves too thin, which is maybe the zone I'm in right now.
Mm.
And for me, spreading myself too thin is like going to a lot of like Garfield events recently that have been happening over town.
Oh,
with the new movie coming out.
I know you get so excited about those. You got to spread those out a little more.
I know. And I need to really protect my energy and stuff. But, you know, it's worth asking ourselves, what's the right amount of socializing and how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people. Maybe you need a little me time, a little alone, introverted time. But either way, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. So things like tuning into yourself, feeling and understanding what you want and need yourself, and then being able to communicate that to those around you, and then most especially to yourself.
Well, if you can't get pregnant immediately, that sounds like a pretty good solution as a backup.
And again, I think I might have even said this before. If I could get pregnant, I would. Just to understand what it's like to have even like boundless energy that can kind of propel me into
like... To feel as incredible as you could feel.
To exercise more, to be working out like 3 hours a day.
Exactly.
Working 9 hours a day on top of that. And then
good brain.
Going out 2 hours. Yes, such a good brain on top of that. So if you're thinking about starting therapy, maybe give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. If you don't like the first person you get, don't worry. There's another one on the docket. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/goodchristianfun today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
10%?
.com/goodchristianfun. You got some thoughts on that 10%?
That's a good deal.
It is.
I agree. First month?
And especially because 10% is where I'm feeling my battery is right now. That's betterhelp.com/goodchristianfun.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers. Aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Welcome back to Good Christian Fun. It's time for another edition of Singles Ministry. Hey.
Kevin.
Okay. Every single on the floor.
You.
What's that?
I have a challenge for you.
What's that?
I think you can do better than that audio drop.
Okay, great challenge.
I think you can. I know you have it in you. I know that there's a parody somewhere. There's even a brand new song. Like, I want to push you toward it because okay. I feel like we're going to use it a lot, whatever it is. And I want that.
I understand what you're saying. I hear what you're saying, Caroline. Do you remember last time you challenged me to spice up a drop? What happened on this show?
I sure did. And maybe it worked exactly as I thought it
would. Oh, I'm being manip-nipped.
I love strangers hearing these shout obscenities. I think it's cool and a great way to meet somebody.
It's an icebreaker, as we so often used to do in Bible study. Paul, we talked a little bit before recording about, a couple weeks ago, about some of your experience with Christian music. You had a different experience than a lot of us did, or a lot of our listeners did in terms of CCM. But what was your experience or history with Christian music?
Oh, thank you for explaining it that way. That was the most polite way of calling me old that I've heard. It's like,
I truly wasn't calling you old.
I know, but when you were talking, I'm like, I go so far back. It's like we're talking like early '80s. So my stuff was more like DC Talk. I already aged out of DC Talk mm-hmm. when DC Talk hit. So I was Keith Green. I was all those guys. I was early Michael W. Smith. I was never a Michael W. Smith guy, by the way. I was all into the Keith Green post-hippie phase.
Yeah.
Type of music,
shouts out to Michael W. Smith this week, by the way, in particular. I don't know if you both, maybe not Caroline, have seen the National Prayer Rally that he was singing worship songs at the mall in Washington, D.C. at hundreds of thousands, what looked like hundreds of thousands, massless Christians praying for our nation in an election year. And cut to Amy Grant scrolling at her phone.
And be like, oh,
delete
baby.
Contact. No.
I want to just like give him a new hobby. You know, I just feel like he's not busy enough to keep him from making these bad choices.
MWS?
Making lately, yes.
It's not what you want to see. There was a good round of Twitter jokes about apparently his place in this world is the sunken place. Things like that. It's not great. It's not great. But okay.
Were you into Stephen Curtis Chapman at all? Or was
yes,
that
I was for a little bit. Amy Grant was, now you mentioned, Amy Grant was my big thing as well.
Good man.
That might have all been in. For like a little, maybe 4 months, I was into Jars of Clay because I really wanted a rock group, a Christian rock group thing. And Jars of Clay, you know, musically, they're fantastic. And then I just said, no, I can't do this. I'm just going to listen to music for music. I tried though.
The siren call of rock music came to you and brought you back to, what was it? Soundwall?
Soundgarden, Caroline.
Soundgarden.
Soundwall.
I was thinking of Wall of Sound.
Incredible stuff. Or you're thinking of Wonderwall? I don't know.
Have you guys heard of Nirvani? Nirvani is like
Nirvani. I love Nirvani.
I love running this pop culture podcast. I'm good at it and I like it. I love music. I always have, always will.
So you learned guitar specifically to lead worship. What were kind of the song we're talking about today was one of the standards. What else was in the songbook for greatest hits?
As the Deer was a big one. Shine Jesus Shine was my big closer. I would get people
send
to stand up and clap, and I would throw the best dancer the tambourine. I'm like, this is your turn, buddy. Like, you've been anointed.
Would he go ham? Is he like Jason Sudeikis and What Up With That, where he's just doing the running man in the background?
Oh, yeah. It's like we're talking bruises on hips from doing the old Josie and the Pussycats
so
thing.
Awesome. Right?
It was all out. I'd get people involved. I had to remove mariachis from one guy. I'm like, I'm never doing this again because it was like you need to have really good. That's hard. It sounds like an easy instrument to play.
Oh, the maracas.
Maracas. What did I say? Mariachis?
The mariachis.
Maracas. Maracas.
I thought you mariachi band.
In a fit
guys,
of...
I'm sorry. It was the wrong choice.
What a vote of confidence and then abject mark of failure to be.
Yeah. I'm taking that back. I burned them because of you.
Yes.
Yeah, it takes a lot of biceps, right? To like keep that going the whole time.
Yeah, and then to stop it all of a sudden, it's
Kevin
it's
would be
difficult.
Good at it.
Maracas?
Yeah.
I have maracas.
Just that motion, you know? Bah, bah, bah,
okay,
bah, bah.
Caroline? Is this our video clip for this week?
No, please don't.
How dare you? All right, gift makers, start your engines.
My family's online.
Disgusto. Okay, so that was all a part. Shine, Jesus, shine. That this is interesting though because this is a generation before what we think of as like contemporary praise and worship. So this is before Hillsong. This is before maybe just like a little bit before Open the Eyes of My Heart, Lord.
Yes. That was all like really you know to me it was like a. I remember this being a magical time because this was 1980. Sorry, it was 89. Christmas time, I was back in Vancouver just for 3 weeks visiting my friends. And then I've been praying to God, like, because I started a youth group in Montreal after I converted, and we had like maybe 10 people in there.
Yeah.
And when we sang, there was no instruments. And so I remember praying to God, I'm like, you know, please give someone in my group an instrument, like, teach one of us to play. And then I went to this restaurant called Night and Day in Burnaby, and with my best friends there. And we all sat down, and my friend Elliot, who I've known forever, he goes, dude, I need to make some money. I got to sell my guitar. And I'm like, I'll buy it off you right now. And so he got the guitar that night, flew to Montreal the next day, and I learned to play. I had 3 weeks to play, learned to play like three chords, which is easy. Like it's an easy thing to learn. And then so that year, I felt like it was magical. I had that praise book. I did Shine, Jesus, Shine, all of Keith Green's songs, a few Amy Grant songs, which I don't remember. But As the Deer was the one that really seemed to get the group going just because it was so melodically beautiful.
As the Deer was the barn burner.
Yeah. Yeah, it was so weird. And because some of the guys like to go with that falsetto, like, you alone. I can't sing it, but they really.
You alone are my strength, my shield. To you, Lord, may my spirit yield.
I got chills when you sang that. I just, it's fantastic. That's exactly it. Oh,
wow.
Man, memories. Oh, I haven't heard that in ages.
Yeah, I think for whatever reason too, I remember snippets of these songs from infomercials as well. Like not even necessarily listening to them in church, but watching like ABC Family. Yeah, like, yeah, but like 50 worship classics on two compact, like that, those commercials.
Act
at the
now,
time.
We'll throw in this bald eagle snow globe as well, holding a Bible.
Who's saluting a Bible flag next to a soldier who's crying, and they're both kneeling
God,
at each other.
I need that. It's precious moments, also, by the way.
Yes, it is huge eyes, precious moments. Okay, but the song we picked for today is Created Me a Clean Heart by Keith Green, who's one of your boys. We have talked about this artist on the show before. Certain singer-songwritery, almost Elton John adjacent vibes in some of his early stuff, especially the way he used piano, like a freak. Just kidding. But very passionate.
What a freak on that piano.
Very connected to the vineyard scene in California. Is either Vineyard or Calvary Chapel, I forget. Oh, well. Should I research this podcast? You just read the wiki today, Caroline. Which one was it?
Vineyard.
Okay. Don't fact check us. Okay.
Don't
so
waste your time.
Let's listen to a little bit. And it is, you know, it's a brisk 420. But, you know, the lyrics are repetitive enough that we won't need to listen to it in its entirety. So here is a little bit of Creating Me a Clean Heart. And if you know this song at home, listener, do the motions along with it.
Creating me a clean heart, oh God, and renew a right spirit within me.
They change keys, but they go down.
Oh, that was the 80s, kids. That was the 80s.
To go down.
Yeah. Let's lower the stakes now. Come on, everybody.
That's where the term get down comes from, by the way.
That's where. And renew a right spirit. Come on now. That right there, what Keith Green just did, invented a whole genre of worship leaders being like, I'm going to say the part of the song before we sing it. I'm going to say the part of the song.
You think he invented that?
I don't know. I mean, it's in the 70s.
Whatever. It's probably.
Hey, this is a famously researchless podcast. He invented it. Sure.
Might as well. I forgot that a whole part of his life is that he was like a teen dreamboat.
That's one way of putting it. Yeah. Depends on what your definition of dreamboat is.
I mean, prepubescent dreamboat at Decca Records. I'm looking at the Wikipedia right here, Kevin. I have the research.
She did her own research, like her family member challenged her to.
I read the books.
I think he was a dreamboat, though. And then he got into drugs. I remember that's what attracted me to his story. He dabbled with drugs for a bit. I'm like, well, I can relate to this guy now. And then all of a sudden you had the hard conversion. I'm like, that's just like me. That's his story is my story. I'm not going to get in a private jet. That's it.
Don't fly.
Wait, wasn't it a helicopter?
I want to say plane, but I might be mixing it up with another.
Let's guess. Rock star. No, I'm okay. It was a plane crash. You're right.
It was a plane crash.
Was it a private plane? Because I remember thinking.
It was like his friend's plane, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was like he was going to his leaving his compound or something.
And his children died with him. So it was very.
Oh,
very
I didn't know
tragic.
That.
Yeah.
Thanks for bringing that up, Paul.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Okay. Paul Bummer.
This is a joyful podcast.
This is why they call me Bitter Bay after I became an atheist.
It is funny though, like his conversion story, like I've heard pastors have the same one. And I used to think it was like so hard to be like, he did drugs at 18. It's like, that's when everybody did drugs. And, like, and then you like fully do a 180 because you're still an extremely young person and you only know how to go hard on stuff. And so it's like, yeah, I mean, not to belittle it, but it's a really common story.
I agree with Caroline. Like, unless you were shooting up heroin when you were 9 years old, your testimony is trash. Yeah.
Next!
Old news.
I'm still looking up. I'm doing the research real time whether it was Calvary Chapel or Vineyard. It was Vineyard. It was Vineyard.
It was Vineyard.
I knew it. Yeah. I told
he totally influenced my praise leading style, though, because I love my friends used to joke about it. Like, even during As the Deer, before the big final chorus, I'd be like, sing it like you mean it. I just yell that in between.
I'm like, oh, hear you.
Yeah. Close your eyes, sing it to God. Oh, God, I just got a flashback to this guy, Pastor Frank, when I was grade eight. We didn't have praise songs back then. Mm-hmm. Like, it was really hard to find. So he would make us close our eyes and sing the Police's Every Breath You Take. And he would sing it to us. And he was like, pretend I'm God singing it to you. Whoa. And he would do this shit to us every night at camp.
Dang. I can't wait to do that to my wife and just sing whatever song that comes to mind. Pretend I'm God. Wish you would step back from your ledge, my friend. All right.
That makes me so much.
Understand the message here. Okay, so created me a clean heart. This, of course, comes from Psalm 51, 10 through 12. Created me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me. Cast me not away from thy presence, and take not thy Holy Spirit from me. Restore unto me the joy of thy salvation, and uphold me with thy free spirit. Bit of a free spirit, actually. That's some of the King David Psalms, in light of his sins of adultery, I guess.
Yeah.
He's asking.
I think the moral of it is like just vibe. You know, you just got to remember to vibe.
Okay, we're done. We're done talking about the lyrics. GCF is GVO, good vibes only.
Live, laugh, love, good vibes only, and everything will work out.
Yeah. And I'm fluent in sarcasm. Yeah.
I listening to this again, I remembered like the when we covered him and I listened to all of his stuff. Yeah. And just like the intensity he brings to the table would be so intimidating as a worshiper or the person in the congregation. I was like, he is feeling it. Like, this guy is 100% sincere. I know he's a showman, but it's not like he is trying to, I don't know, like conjure anything. Like, he really feels this, you know, and like he will not rest until you also are participating at his level, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a true evangelist in his music that way.
In terms of the intensity, yeah.
Yeah.
I love the song so much because it was one of those ones where I was like, even singing it the first few times, even though I knew Psalm 51, it never struck me like, oh yeah, there's none of his lyrics in here. It's this, he's singing Bible verses here. He's singing God's word in this song and put his own music to it.
It's one of the oldest Christian songwriter tricks in the book. Plagiarize God.
Return to the text. Yeah.
And I love that. That really moved me at the time. I remember thinking, I think that's when someone else explained to me when I was a kid, psalm means songs. I'm like, oh, like, yeah, these are meant to be songs. That never hits you until you're a little bit older. Like, oh, there was a melody to this at one point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like this isn't written as prose the way maybe some of the other Bible is.
Right, and Proverbs is actually Hebrew for tweets. So those are meant to be tweeted out to your followers.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Now.
You have to look at the original Hebrew, though, to get that.
That's why I called highlighting my Bible liking it.
Revelation is Tumblr.
Revelation is extremely Tumblr. Good grief.
Oh, no. Might
Tumblr
be Reddit,
before
actually.
They got banned for adult content. I was looking up some context for this on crosswalk.com. Why do we ask God to create in me a clean heart? The author says in this commentary, according to Bible scholars, when David prayed, create in me a clean heart, he used the same Hebrew verb that is used in Genesis for the creation of the world, emphasizing that the kind of radical cleansing he needed could only come from God. David apparently knew the redirection of his desires and thoughts could only come through the intervention of God as well. He began his song by asking God to have mercy on him. And although David sinned against Bathsheba and David's other wives, he ultimately realized he sinned against God, which is a hilarious way of framing it. He like ruined his...
He kind of sinned a little, but he really, the biggest victim in the whole story was Jesus.
Oh yeah, he ruined his life, he ruined his marriage, but he ruined God's day. Created
before
me
a... he had his coffee, even.
Do you have any memory of this verse, Caroline, growing up, of what it maybe meant to you, even instinctually, all biblical scholarship aside, but just on an emotional, instinctual level?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was the old thing of, like, you know, nothing inside me is good and my heart is polluted, you know? And so asking God to car wash the situation inside was, like, so the goal of so many worship songs. Or even just, like, that moment in the song where you're just trying to, like, recenter all the shit that you've been through that week and just reminding yourself that, like, oh, the reason I'm doing all of this is for God and, like, this is the heart of the story or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
That's what it meant to me, I think, yeah. Same for you, would you say?
For me, Cast Me Not Away is the one that got me tripped up because it's like, okay, created me a clean heart. It's like fresh slate. Starting the day new, off to the right foot. Mm. And then when we sang Cast Me Not Away, I was like, whoa, I didn't know being cast away was on the table.
Yeah.
I didn't understand I was living under that threat from
Here's
God.
The thing. You can either center yourself or you can live in darkness and abject loneliness the rest of your life.
I guess so. Those are the options.
Yeah, yeah.
What do I mean it's for intense. You, Paul, emotionally?
I think I was in a very repentant mood for like 6 years. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of stuff to get out of my chest.
It's a long stretch.
Yeah, and it was like I was trying to pour it out through service in any way I could for about that four or six year stretch. And so I think that song, every time I sang it, it was almost like I felt like I was, because I would do it on guitar, so I felt like my tiny desk version of Keith Green's song, where I was like just pouring, like just me and you guys here, and it felt like a confession. I'm giving you my testimony. Yes, again, just like last Sunday and the Sunday before, but I got to give it again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it felt like it did feel at the time, it was pouring out of me. I think that's why when you asked me which song connected, that always comes up in my head right away.
Interesting. Because it kind of summed up those years for you.
Yeah, and there's an episode in my other podcast, The Big Loop. There's one episode called All God's Children, and it's about. It's about a man who loses his faith or is about to lose his faith because he has a son born with only a head. And at one time, he sings Created Me a Clean Heart.
Oh.
And breaks down there. But I had to bring it. I had to edit it out because it made the episode too long. But I remember I still have the recording. I just remember that. Like Charlie, the actor, he sang it so powerfully. And I'm listening to it as an atheist. But I'm thinking it was such a powerful experience watching him do that again. That for both and his performance of it is like that almost broke me down.
Whoa.
Watching it, watching him pour it out of him, like he was such. He just immersed himself in the role of a guy hanging onto his faith by a thread.
Hmm. So it can be kind of like a call for strength or a request for like that repeated blank slate that you feel you need, especially if you were like. Had a stretch of years where you weren't Christian and you did, you know, your laundry list of bad things or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like that reminder to stick with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is a relatable instinct too. The idea of even if it's interpersonal conflict between you and someone else of wanting to absolve yourself of biases and these weird hangups that you have and whatever is kind of contaminating the purity or the good faith assumptions that you want to enter into a situation with, the idea of a clean heart. I do like that as an image. I think that is helpful sometimes to think about it that way. Now, whether it's like, create me a clean heart, don't cast me out. Like, I don't connect with that as much, but I do understand the clean heart alone as an image for that. Restore to me and the joy of salvation. Never found that much joy in salvation. I'm going to be honest with y'all. So not much to restore. there, I guess is what I'm saying. But, you know, renewal, cleanness, fresh start, second chances, you know, we can all relate to those. There can be some common ground there. But I think, go ahead, Paul.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think as a guy who, you know, I figured out I do have some, grew up with some father removal issues, like a very silent father who was always, I was always trying to seek approval. I think that part of Cast Me Not Away really resonated in me because it felt like something that I deeply felt, right? Mm-hmm. Like a grace that I needed, but I didn't realize till much afterwards, like this is something maybe not too healthy for me to think all the time.
Yeah.
So I think, and I remember the first verse from that Tony Campolo sermon that I referenced earlier about the thing that converted me was him talking about his experience in Africa at a funeral for someone who died of AIDS and saying, nothing can separate you from the love of Christ, even death, nothing. And he said it over and over again, nothing can separate you from the love of Christ. And the whole idea of being separated from love and a guarantee that it'll never happen, that's what broke me initially. Because I think because in my life, everything felt conditional in my life. My parents' love, I had to perform to keep it. You know, that's the psychology of my friends' acceptance, teachers, my peers, all of it was very conditional for me until that moment I heard Tony Campolo say that. And it was my first experience of like, oh, that's even possible? An unconditional type of affection or love. It sounds ridiculous almost to think of it now. Like, I didn't hear about this till I was 18. Like, right? I mean, 19. Like, that's weird. But, you know, in hindsight, and if you grew up in certain types of families, this is quite common. And I think that's what maybe people like me just pushed us, drove us, like rode this wave into Christianity and kept us going for a long time. Even if our mind went a different way, like our heart just said, this is something I need. I can't even explain it. It fills a huge hole in me. And it wasn't until I got therapy after the divorce and after the atheism that I was like, oh, okay, I get it now. I get why I was driving so hard and that hit me so hard.
Mm-hmm. I know the proposition of unconditionality in anyone's affection is so attractive, and yes, that is something we can all relate to as wanting and desiring and wanting to give too, if we have the capacity for it. It's really hard to enact that out, to trust it from other people and to give it too.
Oh, it also explains why I have three dogs.
Talk about acceptance.
Yeah.
They got a clean heart every day.
Yeah.
They are the clean hearts. That is so interesting too, of the yeah, because I feel like with most relationships, like you're not going to experience that kind of like radical acceptance, unconditional love. I'd argue that it actually wouldn't be healthy in most relationships to have like zero conditions to the love, you know, like the closest you can get to that is probably with parents who like shouldn't, you know, cast you out of their lives because you're being a little shit that day, you know, or like you're being rude.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. And so when that isn't the example or like the closest earthly thing that maybe we have it, that is so alluring and so powerful to have come from this infinite source who knows you intimately and also like accepts you. And now it sounds like I'm evangelizing. And if you guys want to come to small group on Wednesday night, we can talk about this more. And
yeah, we do popcorn prayer over Zoom. And you just turn your camera on when you're ready to pray. It's awesome. Oh boy. Well, let's go ahead and maybe rate the song. The way this works, Paul, is we're going to give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down. Thumbs up is us sending it all the way to heaven, giving it a holy toast. And that's when we say, heaven-bound. Oh, it's the old one. Or thumbs down, that's a holy roast. That's when we send it to hell. Or if we're not sure either way, we can send it to purgatory, a la the space between. And we'll start, as usual, with Caroline.
I accidentally listened to the live version of this song first of this album.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two, right? Yes.
Oh, there's a bunch. There's all sorts.
Yeah. I liked that one a little bit better. I felt like it was more fun and maybe it made me less sad than this version did.
Right, because it's like, the difference between one guy being sad and a bunch of people being sad together.
Yeah, it was like, we're all in this. Yeah. And you're just like, you could feel people, like, people sounded happy in it and like excited in that. And I feel really split on this song. So I think A Space Between is appropriate because it does make me sad, but also I like understand congregationally how this could be really moving and like wonderful.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we turn to Paul then.
I give it a thumbs up.
Holy easily. Toast. Okay. Easy.
Even now, I at first I thought, well, this is going to be fun looking back on this song. It'll be a nice memory, but just talking through it with you guys and hearing and being reminded of the context of his life, I'm like, oh, this is quite powerful. I should not cheapen what it meant to me at the time.
Yeah. And you don't have to. I think that's part of the aim too. And looking back in a lot of our religious life is that we don't have to dismiss the parts of it that were good or like you said, devalue or cheapen the experiences that were salient to us. I will join with Paul and give it a holy toast myself. Give it a thumbs up-y.
You like it?
Well, Keith Green is almost like musical theater. It's so sincere. Yeah. It's so bleeding, open-hearted, and just like, hey! And he's like crying on his songs, basically. Yeah. And some of the songs we've listened to on the show. So I appreciate his sincerity. And as a document that's not necessarily prescriptive for your life, but descriptive of a time, of a place we've been sometimes or experienced directly, and of other people's experiences too. So yeah, enjoyed this song. Thanks for bringing it back on our radar, Paul.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Paul. Yeah. Instagram, wave a thumbs up.
Hell yeah.
All across your screen.
Oh my gosh.
All over your screen.
Well, oh my God. Dear listener, you can also vote for it yourself. You can give it a roast or toast at Christian Fun Pod. So get out there. And I said, get out there.
Pokemon, go to the polls.
She was a little shy today.
It me.
Yeah, Hillary didn't want to come out to play today. Which she's is so busy. Weird because she's so visible otherwise.
She's all about the vote, too.
Yeah, that's right. Let's rock the vote. A wish to access the poll. That's my WAP. Okay. All right, let's bring it down now.
Oh my God.
To a more worshipful space, a more contemplative space. We're dimming the lights in here, we're lighting the candles. And Paul, another podcast, you may come on there and promote yourself and promote your projects and tell people where to follow you on social media. We're not here to do that. We're here to lift all those things up to the Lord as a loving and humble sacrifice. And we start, as usual, with Caroline.
Usually I lift myself up, but don't follow me. I deleted Twitter off my phone.
You did?
Like, people need to stop. Instead, how about you volunteer to be a poll worker? That's what I'm doing. If I'm going to influence.
Like Jennifer Lopez and Hustlers.
Yeah. Oh, Kevin, you are so fun. Just do that instead. If you're healthy and you're able to, you feel safe, go for it. That's a nice way to help your community. Maybe rock the vote. Who knows? I don't know what's going to happen. It'll be my first time. I'm also going to lift up Hanes Cotton Pajamas for Men. These have changed my life. They're perfect for summer, but it still feels like a little bit of an outfit if you're home all day working in it. Can't recommend them enough. I got mine off Poshmark. Do the same.
Wow. Hell yeah. A curveball of a lift up from Caroline, who you should not follow at Caroline's Farts, but maybe her last tweet ever was the tweet saying, "You may have heard of me. I'm the one that introduced my therapist to the phrase lost in the sauce." And that may be the last tweet she ever tweets.
I live with that. I like that.
Thanks, Caroline. We turn it to Paul.
My Twitter and Instagram handles are the same at Mr. Paul Bae, MrPaulBae. The Twitter is mostly jokes and retweets. My Instagram's all my dogs and my cooking. So different needs.
Oh, Paul's cooking videos are choice too. It's like there's a little bit of thirst trapping going on, and we have to celebrate that.
Yeah, it's that. I have a new book out available to my American friends called You Suck, Sir. It's a chronicle of 12 years of teaching and my interactions with my students. And
oh,
it's,
my gosh. Hell it's, yeah. Is there anything yeah. you're enjoying that you watched or listened to recently?
Oh, God. We binged Cobra Kai straight into our veins. Mm-hmm. Enjoyed that. And I guess I could say it. Selling Sunset. I needed the next season yesterday. It's been... I saw my
yes,
dream
sir.
House on there. I have these houses in certain cities where I look at it and I'm like, well, it, you know, just not realistic, but just a dream. And then I saw Kwame from the Fab Five.
Yes,
he
yes.
walked through that episode. That was the house.
That like, one?
That one. I'm like,
that
I
house
want...
was good. That was that house had was... a bunch of brick and stuff in it. Too,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. You got a good memory. It's,
oh,
it's
my
just,
God.
Yeah, it's out of my price range, obviously, but
so
it's a gorgeous house.
Like... gross, like modern, everything's white, like just terrible houses.
Yeah.
And then every once in a while I'm like, okay, this is what money is for. Like, get
yeah.
this house. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that ridiculous, what, $70 million mansion in Beverly Hills. That one that can't move? Like, no, don't give me that one.
That weird guy that
yeah,
built
yeah.
it. Oh, he gave me such bad vibes. Oh,
yeah, yeah,
man.
Yeah. Jesus wouldn't buy that. He would buy the brick and
Jesus
glass
would,
one.
A more, yeah, a subtle choice.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, Paul. You can lift me up at Kevin T. Porter. I will lift up. I'll lift up a podcast I really enjoyed that launched last week called The Renner Files. My friends Sarah Ramos and Caroline Goldfarb started a podcast about the
oh
rise
God.
And fall of the Jeremy Renner app, which is maybe my favorite thing that's ever happened.
Oh
on
my
the
God!
Need to listen to that.
And the podcast, it is a parody of true crime, but it's also an actually. Terrific, well-produced podcast. They're so funny, and understanding who Jeremy Renner is so insane. It's wonderful, and everyone should listen to it. And watch Ted Lasso. That show's great. Ah, Ted Lasso. He's so nice. He's nice to everyone on that show. He makes them better people. It's very sweet. Paul, thanks so much for joining us on the show, friend.
Well, thanks for having me. This has been a pleasure. It's been so much fun talking
so
to you two.
Fun.
What a blasty blast. I know, after all these years. And I guess there's nothing left to say except for an all of Pod's people said amen. All right, let's go
Justin
out.
Bieber hands.
Paul, do you have a Keith Green song that's not Created Me a Clean Heart that you'd like us to go out on?
Name his top three hits. It's one of those ones. It's
oh biggest... Lord, You're Beautiful?
No, not that one.
There Is a Redeemer?
Not that one.
Easter Song?
Oh, wait. It might have been the first one.
Oh,
what was the first one again?
Oh, Lord, You're Beautiful?
Yeah, that one. Sorry, that one. That's the one.
Number one fan.
Yeah, I never expect the first one.
And he sounds like he's crying.
Oh, Lord, You're beautiful.
He's like the Cowardly Lion of CCM.
He's rushing with the warble.
Yeah.
All I see.
There's no subtext. He tells you exactly what he's feeling there.
No. Sometimes, yeah.
You never have to guess.
A cigar is just a cigar.
It's a relief.
All right, we'll see you next week on the podcast. Goodbye.
Bye.
About
to me. Oh, Lord.
That was a HeadGum podcast.